Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to episode 29 of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name's Andrew Dalzo. I'm here with Josh as always. Unfortunately, Henry can't be with us, but I'm sure we'll be able to muddle through, won't we? And I guess muddling through is probably the theme of the day, given Arsenal's performance. We're recording this on Friday afternoon, but given Arsenal's performance last night, it wasn't especially convincing, but they kind of hobbled their way into the semi-finals, I guess. Is that a fair way to sum it up?
Yeah, a typical Arsenal, they make the scoreline look far, far less nerve-wracking than it was in the process. But they got through. That's what matters. And I'm sure we'll go through this exact same thing in the semis.
Yeah, apart from we won't go through, but there we go.
Yes, we will.
We will get on to the Atletico Madrid draw later, but let's delve into the CSK Moscow win. Obviously, I think when they scored the first goal, I was a little bit concerned, but I was still fairly confident that Arsenal would be able to see this through. When they scored the second goal, I was like, oh gosh, here we go again. Because they even before the second goal, they weren't creating that many chances. There was kind of pressure, and they were pressing high up the pitch, but they weren't really forcing Cech into that many saves. But suddenly, they're 2-0 up, and one more goal, and they're going through. And it was at that point, I was just primarily angry at kind of football in general. I was kind of angry with the fact that I was a football fan. Just like, why do I do this to myself over and over again? And I guess just Arsenal just don't learn, do they? They're just ridiculous. They just do not learn.
No, they don't. They make the same mistakes over and over. And it's amazing, really. I mean, the big mistake, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more later, is just falling asleep. I mean, granted, I don't watch any other team as much as I watch Arsenal, but I don't recall ever seeing a team that falls asleep as much as this team does. And it's not even the same people. It's different people every time. And it's always a crucial person that just decides to take a nap and they get beaten. And
it's as if they've got like a nap rota, isn't it? And then they're like, right, it's your turn to be attentive this week. You've got to watch out for the rest of us. We're going to go for a kip. And if they happen to score, then oh well, that's your fault because you're looking out for the rest of us. And obviously this time was Mustafi and Monreal's turn to have a nap.
Well, Koscielny did too. Koscielny was kind of caught in no man's land.
Well, yeah, also. No, he did.
Freaking defense was caught napping, which I guess is a new record. Normally it's just one person. This time it was three people, which is, I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad, I'm guessing it's a bad sign.
Yeah. Well, it's a good sign if you like naps, I guess, but not so good if you want to win football games. I mean, I think neither goal was good defending in any way. Like, there was no pressure on the ball both times, either for the cross or the shot. I thought Petr Cech's save for the header was actually really good, but and you can't do much about where it lands. But the lack of sense of danger, they're just completely numb to danger. They have no idea what's going on, from Mustafi through to Koscielny through to Monreal. And then you could even say the same for Jack Wilshere for the second goal. He doesn't go and close down. Is it Golovin?
It was everything was Golovin.
Yeah, he was class, wasn't he?
Yeah, I want to sign him up. Like, I hope he traveled on the plane back with us because we need.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That.
Well, did you see what Wenger said after the game?
No,
he was like, "Oh, this Golovin is a really good player." Like, I kind of feigned interest in him, but I was like, "Oh my gosh, you might sign him." Here we go. Wilshere didn't go and close him down, probably because he just wasn't quick enough in thought. And by the time he had decided to go and close him down, it was too late. Golovin got the shot off without any pressure. And now, obviously, Cech should do better with that shot. Either he should just catch it or at least parry it clear from the danger zone. But in terms of the actual being able to read the situation, react to the situation and being alive, no Arsenal player seems to be consistently aware of the danger, which for top level football is completely ridiculous.
And they all get that same look in their face when they realize they've screwed up. Their eyes get really big.
Yeah.
And they scramble to catch up, and they're never going to catch up in time because you're talking about like the likes of Monreal, who's losing pace by the day, and Mustafi and Koscielny, and they just get that deer in the headlights look like, oh, that was my job, wasn't it? And then it goes in the back of the net, and they're looking around like, who else
is looking at it? Yeah, they have that kind of eyes bulging where they're like, oh dear, that was me. that's my man. I should have been there. I like there was a picture that summed it all up, like through the TV, where there was a replay from behind the goal, and as the CSKA player, I can't remember his name, for the first goal was knocking the ball. Was it Chalov or something?
I don't know.
Something like Chalov.
Let's
something
go with
like
that.
The CSKA player was knocking the ball in the net. And you just saw Mustafi and Koscielny simultaneously just raise their hands just for offside.
That's what they do. After they panic, they hope that it's an offside because it's all they can do.
Yeah. I was just like, I just had my head in my hands. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, talk about kind of seeing the danger after it happens and then hoping that you can do something to change what's already happened. Just being completely reactive rather than proactive in the situation, which is actually a common theme for Arsenal, full stop. Like, they're reactive rather than proactive in the transfer window. They're reactive rather than proactive for the contract crisis. They're reactive rather than proactive in terms of their tactics. And they're reactive rather than proactive in their defending. It's a mess. It's a nightmare. And it will happen forevermore, seemingly, because it's been like this way for, what, 10 years, 15 years it's been like this. It's crazy. And I think that the key point really is, like you were saying, it isn't one player. It's almost every player at some point has had these moments where they fall asleep or where they're not alive or where they can't sniff out the danger. And even in the midfield, you know, even players like Wilshere and Ramsey have had moments. Xhaka, Elneny, they've all had moments where they all fall asleep. And for me, that points at some form of underlying reason that doesn't cultivate a aware and defensively sound team, essentially. And that really, the book stops with Wenger on that. He is the man who sets the culture of the club. And for whatever reason, there is a culture that is allowing players to fall asleep at crucial moments in crucial games as well. Like, you look at like Mustafi for them in the Carabao Cup final. All he has to do is stand behind Aguero from the goal kick. That's all he has to do. That's just a lack of concentration. That's not him being a bad footballer per se. Although I think you do that repeatedly and perhaps you become a bad footballer. But in that one moment, that's not being a bad footballer. That's just being stupid. It's just being really, really dumb. It's all it is. But Arsenal players, and all Arsenal players, do it over and over again. Petr Cech is one of the most experienced goalkeepers of the last 20, 30 years. And even he's making relatively stupid mistakes.
That's when I realised that this was an epidemic, was when Petr Cech started doing it too.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it isn't one or two players. It's now all players, and that is probably the most concerning aspect of it. And this time Arsenal got away with it, and at the weekend Arsenal got away with it, but against Atletico Madrid in the semi-finals, for example, against Manchester City, against Manchester United when they scored two goals early, against the better teams, they won't get away with it. They're good enough to score three or four goals against your Southamptons, against your CSKA Moscows. They're not going to score three or four in a couple of weeks against Atletico Madrid. If they have these stupid errors and they're conceding one or two goals from essentially nothing, then they are going to lose these matches. And that's been the case for many, many years.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, you said it. And this was, honestly, this was one of the reasons to always reference it to Granit Xhaka, as I tend to do. This is one of the reasons why I've sort of defended him. It's just because he was making a lot of those mistakes, but there were so many people around him making those mistakes too. And to see it continue and nothing, I mean, it is something about the culture at the club. There is something going wrong, and pinpointing it can't be easy, but that's what you have coaches for. That's why you have people like Arsene Wenger. They're supposed to be able to sniff this stuff out, sniff out these major problems. And it seems like such a simple thing. It's just concentration. How do you get a professional to concentrate for 90 minutes? It doesn't seem like it should be that hard, and yet Arsenal make it look like it's the hardest thing in the world. It's like, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't make sense how consummate professionals like Petr Cech can get caught looking stupid. Like, he's never looked before. I mean, obviously we all make mistakes, but Petr Cech has looked, I think, worse this year in individual moments than he has at any time in his prior life as a footballer, because it's just, I don't know. I don't know what the mindset is to get a guy to feel so comfortable that he can just check out whenever the ball is in his goal box. I mean, for Mustafi, for Koscielny, it's all the same thing. It's how do you just check out? How do you shut down your mind when you're supposed to be at your sharpest?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, and it's not like they haven't shown the ability to do it. They have had games where they are really switched on for the whole 90 minutes. And they're also top-level footballers. If you think about how many boys want to be a professional footballer, like, these guys are extremely gifted athletes. They're extremely sharp mentally just to be where they are, just to be at the top level of arguably the most competitive sport in the world. Just to be at that level, you have to be mentally sharp. You can't not be mentally sharp and be that good at anything. And yet, time and time again, we see these mental errors, these lapses in concentration, the falling asleep, whatever you want to call it. We see it over and over and over again, but they've shown the ability to not do it. So there must be something that is allowing them to slip into complacency, whether it's the culture of mediocrity, whether it's not being pushed hard enough, whether it's a lack of work on the training ground so that they feel unprepared when they enter real life, real game scenarios. I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason, there must be something that is not pushing these players to the extent that they need to be pushed so that they're wholly focused all the time.
And I think Mustafi is a really confusing one, because you talked about being proactive and reactive. He's an incredibly proactive defender. He's almost painstakingly proactive, where we criticize him for being too proactive. Yet he's been responsible for a hell of a lot of mistakes where he's not proactive at all, where he's almost so far reactive that he doesn't react at all. And like you said, that has to come down to something deeper, because I don't see how a professional at Mustafi's caliber, who's on the fringes of a German national team that's the best in the world, how he can just all of a sudden go from being the sharpest he can be for 90 minutes to having these mistakes in games that just, again, defy explanation. There's no reason why this should be happening.
Yeah, and it literally happens from one game to the next game. Like, one game, he'll be brilliant, and the very next game, he'll be terrible. It's not like his kind of form fluctuates over a season and it's a bit more gradual, and you can kind of understand it. Maybe there's an element of fatigue that sets in. Maybe there's a confidence that kind of ebbs and flows throughout a whole year. It's literally from one week to the next, his performances will just flick a switch. It's very odd.
Well, I think that the negative performances that he has, I mean, even in the ones where he's really bad, the reasons why he's bad are for, like, brief individual mistakes, like maybe 1, 2, 3 mistakes. And the rest of the match, he's fairly solid. It's just those bizarre turnoffs where he seems to just zone out of the game. It just don't make any sense for someone like him, who's always so sharp and attentive. I don't know. It will continue to plague us, I'm sure.
Yeah, I am sure you are correct. It's absolute madness. Let's move on to something that's not quite as negative, although I do have a slightly negative slant on it, but that's just me being me. Mohamed Elneny and Danny Welbeck have grabbed the majority of the headlines from last night's game. Elneny got two assists. Obviously, the first one was meant for Welbeck? Because nobody's really questioned this, but when I keep watching it, I wonder if it's a misplaced pass that has happened to fall to Welbeck. But nobody else has actually, or I've not seen anybody else raise that question, so I wonder if that's just me.
I thought it was intended for Welbeck, and I watched it quite a few times, especially given Elneny's reaction, how he kind of watched it like you'd watch a putt after you hit it and waiting to see if it goes in.
That's true. Yeah, he crouched down, didn't he? Yeah, he was Jordan Spieth of the Masters watching it roll in.
I think he intended, especially with how quickly he turned that ball back towards goal. I think he knew what he was doing.
That's probably fair enough. Well, anyway, the result was a perfectly weighted pass that Welbeck swept into the top corner, and that really was the moment of quality that completely changed the tie. And I think. So I guess my negative slant is actually neither player were very good. Elneny was better as the game got on and progressed more and more and more. But actually, and it's harsh to single out any player in that performance because everybody was so poor. So it's difficult for any player to play well. But I didn't think either Welbeck or Elneny played particularly well. Having said that, they produced... Welbeck won an excellent turn and excellent finish, and Elneny two very good passes to win Arsenal the tie. And sometimes that's what the best players in the world do, is they turn up when it matters most. Now, Welbeck and Elneny certainly aren't the best players in the world.
Of course they are.
But it still shows their importance to the squad that when Arsenal really needed them, they were able to create... I mean, when Welbeck receives that ball on the left wing, there's no real chance of a goal there. It's not, doesn't look like he's going to score. And then suddenly, 5 seconds later, he's putting the ball in the top corner because of two or three moments of real top quality. And it's something that Cristiano Ronaldo has made a career on in the last two or three years. As he's aged and his movements declined and his overall influence on the game has declined, he's essentially become a big moment player. That's what he does. He just scores goals in the big moments. And that's exactly what Elneny created and Welbeck finished off on Thursday. And I think they do deserve praise for that and they do deserve credit, especially given their roles, seen as they're only really squad players. So for them to come big in the big moment was very important.
Yeah, I disagree slightly on Welbeck. I thought he was pretty positive throughout the game. I mean, he lost the ball more than anyone else, but he was trying things. And that's something I always bring up about Arsenal players, is so few of them are willing to try things to really... And I saw Welbeck trying things. I mean, even when he tried to dink the ball around Gullivan and then he got outran and he kind of just screamed in frustration. I was like, that's fine, though. At least you tried to make something happen rather than just turn around and pass it backwards. And I don't know, I gave him man of the match just because... And I'm quoting Alexi Lalas again. I'm upset with how much I have to quote him lately, but he after Welbeck's score, he mentioned how, you know, and kind of like what you said, when Arsenal needed somebody to step up, you wouldn't have thought it would be Danny Welbeck, but that turn was beautiful, the finish was beautiful, the run was, it was all Welbeck. And as far as Elneny, yeah, the first half he was terrible, and I think, you know, you had written an article before the match about playing conservatively, and I think obviously, Arsenal took that approach, but I wonder if Elneny just isn't meant to play that way. The difference between him and Xhaka is that I think Elneny, I likened him to he's like a torpedo. He always goes where the ball is. He's very active. He's an engine, and I don't think if you're playing conservatively that he's the best for that. And especially if he starts getting frustrated early, because as we saw in the first half, there was that one play, I think it was in the ninth minute, where he took the ball and he just started going towards the touchline, just straight towards the touchline, and he kept getting more frustrated and more frustrated, and eventually just lost the ball. And it wasn't the only time it happened. He's not as good controlling the ball if he doesn't have somewhere to go with it. And that's where I think we really miss Granit Xhaka, because Xhaka isn't that active, but I think that plays into his favor in games like yesterday. I think if we would have had Xhaka in there, it would have made a difference. Because he knows how to control the ball. He knows how to hold on to it, even if there's a lot of movement around you. But that said, once the game heated up, and Elneny could start using his engine instincts, we started to see him do a hell of a lot more. So credit to him for turning it around, because it's not very often we see an Arsenal player play so poorly in one half and then so well in the next.
Yeah, he got better and better as the game went on. I think he's quite kind of ratty in his defensive work, which is really nice at times and really good, but he doesn't have the same discipline that is needed. And you'll sometimes... Xhaka has done this increasingly less as time has gone on. You'll sometimes see him just hare after the ball, and he'll run 10, 15 yards straight up the pitch, straight after the ball, and leave a massive gap in behind him. And you're the deepest lying midfielder in front of a defence that is already terrible. Where are you going? Don't go and try and win the ball. You're meant to provide structure and stability. You're not necessarily meant to win the ball back. I think Arsenal don't play a high enough pressing game for the defensive midfielder to go and press other midfielders high up the pitch. If they did, if the likes of Lacazette and Ozil and Welbeck, say, played really on the front foot, and Welbeck demanded that the back four step up the pitch and everybody plays on the front foot, then that's fine. Elneny can go and run after that ball, because you've actually not got a lot of space in between him and the defence, because the defence is playing so high. But Arsenal don't do that. Arsenal play actually with a relatively deep line, which means that there's a lot of space in midfield. So if your defensive midfielder goes haring after the ball, the opposition is just going to play a couple of 1-2s, and then they're out of the play. Like, they're out of the game for the next 10, 15 seconds, and the opposition are driving at a back four that is fairly exposed.
Yeah.
But he improved at that as the game went on, I think.
There are times where he does that thing where Moscow would pass it back to the keeper, and he would just sprint towards the keeper. And he'd be the furthest player forward, the only person in the screen, and then they'd punt the ball downfield. He'd turn around and go back the other way. Like, there's no reason to do that. No. Unless he's just trying to stretch his legs, in which case, run side to side or something. You don't got to run straight at the keeper and take yourself out of the game.
Yeah, no, and I think Xhaka's clearly improved in this area. Yeah. He doesn't do it nearly as much as he used to. Because he used to be real culprit for it when he'd give the ball away, and then the first step would be bang, he'd be gone straight after that ball, almost kind of in anger that he'd lost it. He'd just be like, I'm off, I'm going to get it back. When actually the smarter move is to say, well, actually, I need to hold my position. And he does that now, almost without fail. He will hold his position in front of the back four rather than haring after the ball. Elneny still needs to learn that. In the second half, when you have a back three with two fullbacks, you can kind of get away with a midfielder being a bit more aggressive in his running, because you have that third centre half to provide a bit more stability. But when it was the back four, I thought he got positionally got caught out quite a few times. Having said that, he provided the two assists and you could argue was one of the key players in Arsenal winning this tie, which even 10 days ago, you probably said he might play maybe 30 minutes combined across the two legs coming off the bench. So credit to him. That's what you want a squad player to do, to be able to come in these games every now and then and perform to a good level. And that's exactly what he did. So well done, I guess. And I think he's deserving of his new contract, and tonight proved it, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with you. I mean, we always knew we were going to get out of him. The fact that he's proving that he can do more is, I mean, it's only just going to get more exciting if he keeps doing that.
Hopefully. Two other midfielders who didn't have quite as prosperous an evening. Jack Wilshere went off, was it on the 63rd, 64th minute, something like that?
Yeah.
He really struggled, and then Alex Iwobi came on. Who did he come on? Did he come on for Lacazette? And then Welbeck went up front.
Yes.
He came on for somebody, maybe for the final 15, 20 minutes, something like that. And he, after Ozil beautifully slid him in with a lovely pass, he then on his left foot absolutely shanked it was a shot.
Don't call it that.
Could have been
don't
seen
call
as
it
was so bad it could have been
was,
seen
it
as
wasn't
a pass.
Anything.
Yeah, it was terrible, and it kind of dribbled wide of the far post. And a lot of people have picked up on it. Like, you looked at his face, and it was just a face of fear. He was absolutely terrified at the position that he was in. He was like, oh my gosh, I could score. Oh no, I need to score. And then he got scared, and then he didn't know what to do. And, you contrast that with Aaron Ramsey when he went through in the final minutes. Now, admittedly, the tie was probably over at that point, and the pressure's significantly reduced. But nevertheless, you never really doubted that he wouldn't score that. He was clinical. He was ice cold. He was confident. He knew exactly what he was going to do. Iwobi was very, very, very different. So, so what was your take on the two midfielders' performances, and I guess where do Arsenal go from here with both of them, really?
I've been frustrated with Iwobi all year, as everybody should know by now. But normally, whenever he does something like that, I get angry at him. This time I just laughed. I was like, unfortunately, this is what we've come to expect from Iwobi. And I hate to say that because he's still young and there's so much potential there, but when he gets close to goal, this is what he does. He overhits the ball to nothing in particular, and that's become the standard. And as far as where you go from there, I know we've talked about this a lot. I think if you can't move him back further into a more deeper midfield role, then there's nothing you can do with him. Because, I mean, it's gotten to the point now where he's going on 2 years of not being able to handle himself around the goal. And granted, there is a growing process. There's always going to be a growing process. But 2 years of very little improvement in front of goal, that's kind of worrying. Even for somebody that's only 21 years old, you really should be seeing progress by now. Even the smallest hint of progress. But he's had a lot of bad misses. But that one last night, I think, was probably his worst. Because he could have taken all day to decide if he wanted to shoot or pick out Ramsey. He could have stopped on the ball, looked around. He could have done anything. He did the worst possible thing and made it look absolutely horrible. And granted, it was probably the only thing he did in the game, but for me, it was just sort of the prototypical Alex Iwobi, and that's what you can't have. I mean, we talked about Welbeck and Elneny and being such a big part as squad players. Well, Iwobi's a squad player now, and he's not a big part, and he needs to. I think you either got to move him back, or you got to loan him out, or something, because he can't keep doing what he's doing. As far as Wilshere, I mean, it's tough because he was. You can see he's got good intention. I mean, for the first 10, 15 minutes, I thought he's very active. He's very positive. And then the more things get frustrating, the more he tries to force it. And this is what he's always done. It almost feels like he's reverted to a former self, where he's pushing the issue because he's frustrated that he can't do anything and that the team is struggling. So he tries to do it all himself, which is very Alexis-like, where he and then he just drills himself deeper into the ground and has to get taken off in the 67th minute because he's a liability now. He's not doing anything positive. And you know, this is one of the reasons he kept getting hurt early in his career, is because he would keep the ball longer than he had to. He would get a crunching tackle because he never gets rid of the ball. He wants to do it all himself. And that's what he was doing again against Moscow. I think
he knows he's not playing very well. And it's weighing on him.
And that he's not going to get a contract playing the way that he's playing.
Yeah, exactly. And he's trying... He's so desperate to prove himself at Arsenal. Like, the fact that Wenger told him, we're not going to offer you a new contract last summer. He said, Wenger said, you can go and find a new club. And Wiltshire said, no, I want to prove that I'm worth a new contract. And then he actually went and did it. And for the first 2 months, 3 months that he was in the lineup, I thought he was very, very good. And I was actually quite excited to see what he could do moving forward with a new contract and to see what would happen. But since then, I wonder if fatigue has set in. He's not played a season as long as this in years, which is probably an indictment on his own, you know, his own injury record as much as anything. So he's probably tired. he looks tired. That kind of burst that he has over the first couple of steps, he doesn't have anymore. There was a couple of times where he tried to run away from a CSKA Moscow midfielder, and in previous years, 3 or 4 years ago, he'd have just glided away from them without any trouble whatsoever, and he didn't have it. You could see he didn't have it, and I think he knows he doesn't have it. I think he's just so desperate to prove himself, but I think he knows he's probably not good enough anymore, or he probably can't get to the level that probably his talent is deserving of. And I don't think there are many people who would say that he is an untalented player. You know, when he broke onto the scene, he's one of the best 18-year-old footballers I've ever seen in my life. He was absolutely remarkable, and I was one of those who was thinking this guy's going to be one of the best Arsenal players in the history of the club, because he was, in terms of his natural talent, he was that good. And I don't think there are many people who would really disagree with in terms of his talent. I think he is now coming to the realisation that he's never going to fulfil that, and he's never going to realise his true potential, which is just sad more than anything. It's extremely, extremely sad. And I think he's getting frustrated. You can see it in him. He's just getting frustrated that he's not as good as he thought he would be.
Yeah, I don't know what to add to that. I mean, you cover pretty much everything that we all fear and know about Wilshere now. And I don't know. I really don't know what's going to change with him. I don't.
Do you think he'll stay beyond the expiration of his current contract?
You know, I don't like a lot of what Roy Keane's been saying about him. But I believe it was him that said something like, Wilshere needs to sign that contract because he's not going to see much better anywhere else, and I'm starting to agree with that. If that contract is still on the table, I think it starts sneaking into Wilshere's head that I need to sign that. I need to stay here because I don't know what else is out there for me if this is the best that I can do. And it's sad to say. I mean, it's like you said. He's there was so much, and there still is so much talent there, but you really have to start questioning if he'll ever get there.
Yeah, and I think, speaking on the contract, there's probably not another manager in world football who will give Wiltshire as many opportunities as Wenger will to prove himself next season. So from Wiltshire's perspective, if he's thinking, I need game time to be able to establish that I've still got this talent left in me and that I can still perform at the level that was hoped of me when I was younger, there's probably not another manager who will give him as many opportunities as Wenger. Maybe Gennaro Gattuso, as he was talking about him after the Europa League. But there aren't many other managers who are going to have the patience and have the ability in terms of the number of games. You know, he can play Wiltshire in the League Cup and in the FA Cup and in the Europa League or in the Champions League and stuff. And hope that he can prove that he's still got something left. Perhaps that contract is maybe now the best avenue for the remaining years of his prime, because he's 26 now. Like, this is, you know, these are prime years, and he's looking far, far from his prime at the moment, which is very sad. Finally, we'll discuss the Atletico Madrid draw. So Arsenal sadly got drawn against the Spaniards with Salzburg and who's the other team? Marseille getting drawn in the other league. Did you see those games, by the way?
I didn't watch them, but I was listening to the broadcast and Lawless and I forget the other guy were talking about it. It sounded freaking fascinating.
Yeah, so I watched the highlights after the Arsenal game, and Dimitri Payet's goal is sexy. It is a flipping good goal, and he played well. Like, he has this pass for their, I think it was their second or third goal, off his left foot, his wrong foot, and he swings it about 40 yards right round the defence, inch perfect. Like, he looked good. Like, I was kind of glad we avoided Marseille as well, to be honest, even though Madrid is the tougher tie. They look pretty good. But anyway, Arsenal are drawn against Atletico Madrid. The first leg is at home, which I think is a good thing, because I wouldn't be surprised if Arsenal lost 2-0 in Madrid, and if you don't get that away goal, you're coming back home. If Madrid score, then you've got to score 4. Suddenly, it's a long way to go. I think at home Arsenal can actually win, just maybe, and then I think they've got an advantage to defend in Madrid, which I think will suit them. Do you agree? Are you happy with the draw, or would you rather have seen them play Salzburg or Marseille?
Well, I'm not happy with the draw, but now that it's here, I've been doing my usual thing of convincing myself that it's okay, and I've actually succeeded in convincing myself that it's going to be just fine. I think mostly there are a couple things, and I've been writing this article for the site about why I don't know. It's one of those things where I'm not nervous, which makes me nervous. But I don't know. I mean, when you think about the strengths of Atletico Madrid, it's their defending. They're not an attacking team. And I think that drastically plays in Arsenal's favor, because the teams that have scorched us are the Manchester Cities, the Liverpools, the teams that just attack relentlessly with speed and with precision. And that's not what Atletico Madrid do. They sit back. And to me, there's not a defense in the world that can keep Mesut Ozil out for 90 minutes. There's going to be chances that Arsenal have. It's just a matter of taking those chances, because you're not going to get that many. But if you can take the chances that you do get, I don't see why you can't put 2 goals past them in that first leg, which to me is all we really need. And the other thing, one of the other things is, you look at what Atletico Madrid did against Chelsea in the Champions League. They didn't do anything against Chelsea. I mean, they lost at home, and then they drew 1-1 at Stamford Bridge. We've handled Chelsea this year. It's not that big of a chore. Chelsea's not, and Atletico couldn't do it. So I think that's another thing that I'm looking at. Like, well, if Chelsea can do it, Chelsea, who we've all of a sudden been able to handle the past five, six times we've played them, if they can handle this team, then so can we. And
that's true. A caveat on that. Chelsea were in good form back then.
Yes.
Like, this isn't the Chelsea that we played in January. And Griezmann hadn't got going either back then. Whereas Griezmann is absolutely flying at the moment.
This is true, but as far as
Griezmann, but you are right.
As far as Griezmann goes, he's again the kind of striker that really scares me is the fast one, the one that can get in behind us and outrun our defense. And Griezmann's quick and he's smart, and I think he's kind of he's. I've always compared him to a sharper Lacazette, but he's not fast. He's not going to turn on the burners and being able to outrun Mustafi, assuming Mustafi doesn't take a nap. I don't know. And Diego Costa, we've pocketed him so many times that I'm actually kind of happy to see us play Costa again, because I love to see Mustafi get under his skin.
He's in bad form as well. He's not scored in a long time.
Yes, and I'm always happy to watch him struggle and get frustrated. So I don't know. I have this optimism that if we can sneak, obviously a clean sheet's key, but if we can get 2 goals past them in that first leg, I'm very, very confident. I don't see them as capable of scoring a lot of goals, and that's what Arsenal's biggest problem is keeping out teams that score a lot of goals. They don't have to worry about that against Madrid, and there's not a lot of speed on that team either, and that's another thing that I think is key, because you know, Moscow, the big thing that we haven't talked about yet with Moscow that changed between the two legs, in the first leg they were incredibly slow and they didn't have a lot of guys out there that were going to beat us. In the second leg, they put a lot of burners out there, and it showed. They torched Monreal. They torched him constantly, and they were getting behind the defense. I mean, it was clear that they made the tactical adjustments they needed to beat us, but I don't think Madrid have that ability to just pile on the speed to beat us, nor would they, because they have a very set way that they play, and that's defensively.
Yeah, I think you're right. Quick teams have always, you know, Arsenal have always struggled with Liverpool, for example, because for the last 4 or 5 years, they've played on the front foot, they've pressed high up the pitch, they have these real burners up front in the kind of wide areas, they're extremely quick, they play at a pace, you know, they play the ball quickly between one another. So you can say the same about Manchester City as well. They play at real fast pace. You've got Sterling and Sané on either wing, and they can, you know, they can beat any fullback in the world. Atletico Madrid aren't like that. They are a slower, more ponderous team. Defensively, they are excellent. I do think Arsenal can get at them. I think that the lack of pace is a big thing. I think Arsenal will be quicker than them. My one primary worry is, can Arsenal score more than two over the two legs? Maybe, maybe not. Can they keep a hold of Griezmann is my main worry. It wouldn't surprise me if Griezmann plays in that kind of number 10 free roaming role and he just runs rings around the Arsenal midfield. And the defensive midfielder, whether it's Xhaka or Onene, they don't know whether to drop back and take him. Koscielny and Mustafi don't know whether to step up and mark him. He sometimes drifts wide and picks up the ball in those kind of inside wide areas. Sometimes he darts in behind. And that's what I worry about. I remember when Arsenal played Chelsea in the, I think it was the second leg of the Carabao Cup semi-final, and for the first 15, 20 minutes, Eden Hazard ran rings around them and he absolutely killed them. And it was Elneny was playing in the defensive midfield role and he just didn't know what to do. And eventually Wenger shifted to a back three. He played Elneny at centre-half and Max Chelsea up man for man. And my fear is that Griezmann could do a similar thing to what Hazard did in those 20 minutes. If Arsenal can keep a handle on him, and it's a pretty big if, but if they can, then I think they've got a good chance. But whether they can or not is a very different question.
Two things about that. I worry about our midfield too, but every time I worry about our midfield, I think back to the first time we played Tottenham. And yeah. I think that was one time where everybody seemed like everybody knew before the game Arsenal's midfield was going to get torched. It was Xhaka and Ramsey.
Yeah, yeah.
They had no defensive qualities.
Ramsey, yeah.
And they were fantastic. They absolutely shut down everything they had to do with the attack. Eriksen had nowhere to go. It was a great showing. And that's probably what we're going to be looking at in the second leg. I don't know what Mkhitaryan's return table will look like. If we'll be back for that first leg, it's going to be tight. But the second leg, he'll probably be in the picture. And I don't know if Elneny has to be out there. I don't know. It's a question we'll have to see as it gets closer. But I don't worry about our midfield nearly as much as I used to because I know what they're capable of. Now, what they're capable of isn't always what they do, but just knowing what they're capable of gives me a bit of confidence. And another thing I wanted to say was, would you consider a back three against? Because I thought about putting Chambers in there just because Chambers is so good at one-on-one lockdowns. He seems to be just fantastic at that.
Yeah, I would. I'd love to have a defensive midfielder I trusted to play a man-to-man role on Griezmann. So I remember when Man U played Real and Sir Alex Ferguson stuck Phil Jones on Cristiano Ronaldo in a man-to-man role and he completely shut him down. Now, admittedly, Phil Jones is not nearly a good enough player to be able to shut down Cristiano Ronaldo time and time again. But for that one game, he was good enough. I just don't think Arsenal have that kind of player.
I think you could stick Mustafi on him because he's really good at locking. I mean, we've seen him lock down.
Possibly.
We've seen him do it to Costa, to Morata. We've seen him lock down strikers when he gets.
You would have to play a back three if you asked a centre half to take Griezmann, which isn't necessarily a bad idea. You could do that and play Chambers as the right-sided centre-half and let Mustafi essentially ignore Costa and just focus on Griezmann. That's not a terrible idea. I would have loved Coquelin in this game, if I'm honest. This is the type of game where I would love to have stuck Coquelin in there and played Coquelin and Xhaka and Ramsey just in front of them, because I think that would have been a really strong midfield against the counter-attack, against the kind of the drifting, because you have Koke out wide as well, and he's not going to stay out wide, he's going to drift inside. So you have all these players who kind of drift in and out. They might play Gamero as well, you never know. And they don't have very set positions, because they're so deep quite often, they defend deep, but then when they counter, you can sometimes find the left winger on the right wing because he's been defending and then then off they go. And because of that, you can get very confused in that defensive midfield position. So someone like Coquelin would have been ideal. obviously Arsenal don't have Coquelin. I don't think they have a player like Coquelin. So I don't think a back three is a terrible idea. I'd be surprised if Wenger uses it.
No, he won't.
But it wouldn't be a terrible idea. But and again, because you could play, if Mkhitaryan isn't available, you could then play Welbeck and Lacazette as a front two and move Ozil into the middle. I'm really playing the counter attack really with, because if Mkhitaryan isn't fit, I would like to see Welbeck play really, and because I think his pace on the counter attack, especially in Madrid, away from home, he's going to work hard. He's going to run his socks off. I think he could be an absolutely invaluable part of the team. I think the thing is about the Madrid door is Arsenal were going to have to play him at some point. I think most people would have rather played them in the final because in a 90-minute game, you never know what might happen. And Arsenal will have these 45 minutes where they just absolutely blister teams. And they can, you know, they've been 3-0 up against, was it Manchester United and was it Chelsea? They were 3-0 up at half-time in the last 2 or 3 years just because they've put these 45-minute performances together where they just absolutely carve open really good teams, and they just destroy them. So I think in a final, people were kind of hoping for that. You're like, you never know, we might get the Arsenal from the FA Cup final or something. Over 180 minutes, can they be consistent enough over a larger sample size? Perhaps not. But if you've got to play him at some point, why not get it out of the way?
I mean, we saw it against Moscow, is we had that big lead. And even then, going into Russia, we're going to be going into Spain. Like you said, those teams like Moscow aren't going to capitalize on every chance. But teams like Madrid with Griezmann are going to, and that's
the clinical.
That's the one thing that keeps nagging at my brain, telling me to be more nervous than I am.
I think one thing for sure is that everyone was slagging off the Europa League at the start of the year, and I was one of them. But Atletico Madrid in a semi-final, I don't care what competition it is, that's a huge game. I mean, this is one of the biggest games for Arsenal in the last 5 years. Has there been a bigger game than this? Maybe the FA Cup final against, was it Hull, was the first one.
I think against Chelsea was a big one too, because it was the first time we were facing a really big team in a final.
Yeah, maybe Chelsea. But there's certainly not been many games that have been bigger than this, even though it's only the Europa League, which is exciting, if nothing else. It gets me excited for Arsenal European football again, which has not been the case for a couple of years.
I mean, this Europa League saw Dortmund and Napoli bounced, so there's nothing to scoff at in this league. This is the real deal.
And Arsenal did well last night.
Yeah.
Seeing Lazio and Leipzig go out was a bit of a relief. Especially given their leads. Lazio was it like 3 or 4 goals up or something?
I think they were.
Yeah, it was incredible. Is there anything else you want to say on Madrid before we take a break?
No, I did want to point out, though, if anybody hasn't seen Aaron Ramsey's wound from the Moscow match, it's something you need to see, because it's after he got taken off, I guess they just stuck like 6 or 7 staples in his leg and told him get back out there, and he did, and he scored that goal, and if you ever find yourself questioning Aaron Ramsey's grit or determination or the need to keep him, just take a look at that wound and think of everything he was able to do with that gash in his leg with staples holding his skin together. So take a look.
It is quite the picture. And they are, like, they're not medical staples, or they don't look like medical staples. They literally look like the ones you'd get from, like, well, staples, like that, like down the road. I bet you don't have staples in America, do you?
No, we do. I didn't know you had them in England.
Oh, you do have staples?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Oh, there we go. Yeah. So it literally, like, the ones you'd, like, put together application forms and stuff. It's like, it's those kind of staples in the back of his leg, all covered in a tattoo.
And it didn't look like they were doing a good job holding it together either. Some of the staples had, like, come loose and were sitting in the middle of it.
No. It was more like a kind of crevice of blood, really, in the middle of these bridges that were really stretched out that you wouldn't want to walk across.
Needless to say, it's probably really hard to run when your calf has that in it. I assume it was his calf. I'm not sure.
Yeah, where, no, but, yeah, it was his calf.
Yeah.
Yeah, so credit to Ramsey. Credit to Ramsey. Certainly braver than Alexis Sanchez and his
his boo-boo lip.
Anyway, we will take a short interlude, and when we come back, we'll preview, I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll preview Sunday's game against Newcastle United, because everybody cares immensely about it. Hello and welcome back to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name's Andrew, I'm with Josh, and we are looking forward to Sunday's game against Newcastle, where Arsenal will travel north, a long way north, for those who don't know their English geography all that well. They'll go to St. James's Park and face, surprisingly, one of the form teams of the Premier League, which is not what I was expecting to be saying about Newcastle this season, but there we go. Do you care about this game? Because I'm really struggling.
The only thing I care about is seeing Aubameyang again, because, I mean, that's the only reason the Premier League matters. I guess seeing Reece Nelson again is a big deal, because I do think he's going to be starting, and maybe we'll see Maitland-Niles out there. He disappeared recently. Like,
he did have an injury, but I can't remember what it was. No, go on, sorry.
I was going to say, if you go on the Arsenal website, he's no longer listed. He hasn't been on the bench, though, for any games. I don't know.
Yeah, so Wenger said he'd be a little bit short for Sunday's game against Southampton. But I never realised he had an injury in the first place until Wenger said he'd be a little bit short. I was like, oh, okay. Short of what? Like, energy? The will to live, happiness, or like what is he short of? Height. So I was a tad confused by those comments, and I've done Google it. I can't work out what his injury is, but apparently he was injured.
Yeah, he's been out since Watford. I think it was the last match. I think that was March 10th or mid March. Yeah. So whatever the case, he could be back.
He is back.
I'd be excited to see him out there. I'd be excited to see. I don't know. I'm just trying to drum up something for me to be excited about.
Kolasinac, your favorite
player.
Yeah,
Kolasinac's going to be out there. He's going to be... I want to see him have a run-in with Jonjo Shelvey, because I I like Shelvey because he plays that kind of nasty game. But even
He's so cocky, though.
I know.
So
that's cocky. What I was going to say. Even players that I like that, when they play against Arsenal, I would love to see them get put in their place. And Kolasinac is the guy to do that.
Yeah. He's got such a slappable head as well. I'd love to just play drums off his head. I'm actually quite excited, assuming that he plays the same position, to see Alex Iwobi.
What?
Because I'm gonna continue to bang this drum, right? Alex Iwobi is a much better player without Mesut Ozil and without Aaron Ramsey and without Jack Wilshere, and he needs pace around him. He needs to be the Mesut Ozil of the team. He doesn't need to accompany Mesut Ozil, and I genuinely think that he can still be a very good player in that system. And we saw it against Southampton. He actually played well, and he was the Mesut Ozil type figure in that system. And I reckon that I'm quite excited to see if he can now replicate it for a couple of games when he is the creative fulcrum of the team, assuming that he continues to play in that role. Admittedly, he didn't play very well when he came on against Thursday, and he's had some bad games. And I'm not necessarily his biggest fan, but he's a talented lad, and he's only 21, and he's really good for Nigeria. Have you ever seen him play for Nigeria?
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's
awesome.
One of those question marks of why can't he do that at the club level? Like, same with Danny Welbeck a couple of years ago. He was doing this stuff for England that was just
for
magical,
England, yeah.
And he comes here and he looks lost.
But Iwobi's playing that central creative role for, like, he's the heart of that Nigeria team, and he plays really well. And I think the same thing or at least I wonder if it's worth exploring if the same thing could be true at Arsenal, because he isn't a winger. He has the pace to play out wide, but he isn't a winger. He wants to be in the central position. I'd really love to see him in a bit of a deeper line central midfield position, a bit like where Wilshere and Ramsey have been playing. Obviously, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but that's why I'd love to see him play. But even seeing him playing in a central attacking midfield role where Ozil plays, I would be interested to see how he plays for the next couple of games. I mean, it's not the most exciting thing in the world, but it's more exciting than wondering if Arsenal might get a meaningless 3 points so they may be able to finish fifth or seventh.
I'm excited to see Granit Xhaka back because I did miss him. I missed being able to sing his praises.
Yeah, I bet you missed him. And do you know what? Arsenal missed him.
They did. And I saw your article before the match that Arsenal were going to miss him. I was just touched. I was so touched that people are starting to understand.
I mean, he's still rubbish, but Arsenal but Arsenal did miss. He's just kind of less rubbish than other players in the team. But Arsenal did actually miss him on Thursday. So yes, I'll be excited to have Welbeck back. And I think, you know, seeing Aubameyang, it's more kind of tantalising for next season, isn't it, of what's going to happen with Aubameyang and Lacazette, and is he going to put Ozil and Mkhitaryan, is he going to play all four, how do you fit them all in the same team, where does Ramsey fit in, does Xhaka keep his place, what the hell happens with Wiltshire, and then you've got players like Welbeck who's in excellent form, and Iwobi's at least trying to force his way into the team. There are a lot of options, and then you know, players like Nketiah and Reece Nelson, who are just trying to get themselves minutes from somewhere. These final, what is it, six games, however many it is, they are players likely to play who are trying to essentially gain more playing time next season. And that is at least interesting to see how they got on, and we're going to see them in different roles, and we're going to see a player like Danny Welbeck, for example. He might now be one of the best attacking players on the team if he plays on Sunday, whereas usually he's a kind of complementary piece, whereas actually now alongside Aubameyang he's going to be the most senior player potentially. How does he handle that responsibility? How does he cope with being the one who's expected to now deliver rather than just kind of compliment those around him? They're not as interesting as will Arsenal finish in the top four, will Arsenal compete for the title, but they are still at least intriguing questions that are worth looking out for.
I find myself falling into the same trap with Danny Welbeck of believing that this is what he can do regularly. And I can't count the number of times I've fallen into this. I mean, whenever he scored that header against Leicester, I thought, this is it. He's turned it around.
Yeah. When he came back.
Or a brace against Southampton, I think it was 2 years ago, I thought, this is it. He's turned the corner.
Was that in the FA Cup?
I think so, yes.
Where he dinked the keeper, didn't he, for one of his goals?
Yeah, so oh my God, he's here. And then at the start of the season, he got out to three goals and an assist. I thought, this is it. This is the season we've been waiting for. And then here I'm doing it again. I'm believing that Danny Welbeck, he can...
I know you're on about Aubameyang catching Alexis Sanchez. Have you seen that Welbeck has caught Alexis Sanchez? They both have 10 goals this year.
Which makes me so happy.
It's amazing. If Welbeck scores more goals than Alexis Sanchez this year, it's so funny. The guy who literally cannot shoot has scored more goals than Alexis Sanchez. It'd be incredible. I'd love it. I would absolutely love it. I think the trap thing is accurate for almost every Arsenal player.
Yeah, true.
I think maybe, say, Koscielny's a little bit different. Maybe Monreal's a bit different. Maybe Cech's a bit different. But if you think Mustafi, I fall into the trap that he could be a consistent defender and then he falls asleep. Bellerin, I fall into the trap that he could be a genuinely world-class fullback and then he kind of loses his confidence or something. Iwobi is the same. Elneny isn't the same. Xhaka is definitely the same. Ramsey's the same. I feel like he could be a world beater, but he's only a world beater for maybe a month, a year.
But his is explainable like is his health. Everybody else...
No, that there are reasons for all of them. Right. And some of them are not necessarily the player's fault. But even so, it's still a trap that I fall into. Same with Wilshere. Same with Welbeck. And Welbeck, to be fair, could be explained by injuries and health as well. Because a lot of the time he gets going and then he gets injured.
I think you can throw Ozil into that. Not recently, because Ozil's been great recently, but he falls into that.
No, yeah. No, you could throw Ozil into that, absolutely. And then even like Theo Walcott, who's left, Giroud, who's left, Coquelin, who's left. All of these players have these kind of periods where you're like, oh, this is it. They're here. They've finally arrived. This is the player that we were finally expecting. And then whether it's injury or loss of form or Wenger takes them out of the team for whatever reason, it doesn't quite translate into consistent and sustained success.
Joel Campbell fits into that too.
Joel Campbell fits into that too. And I just fear that Reece Nelson and Eddie Nketiah and Maitland-Niles are also going to fit into that same role.
Yeah.
It's just Arsenal, the Arsenal trap, isn't it? And you can go back to, I mean, for years and years and years, this has been true. Like, I remember when I used to look forward to Philip Senderos being a full-time Arsenal defender. Because I thought he was genuinely a good player. What was I thinking? Like, that's just ridiculous. Like, Abu Diaby, like, he was class whenever he wasn't injured. All these players have this trap that you fall into. And Welbeck is a prime example. And I am slipping right into it once again. Because I genuinely think he's guaranteed to score 30 goals next year. I've no doubt about it.
I mean, why stop there? How many has Salah got this year? He can score more next year than Salah had this year. It's perfectly reasonable.
To be honest, I still don't think Salah's that good a player. But yeah, this is
of course
just,
not. No,
this and is I think my opinion that I don't think.
And
he's
I
very
think
good.
the Harry Kane bubble is going to burst still too. So it's going to be
Welbeck versus Aguero. Harry Kane's going to steal all of Welbeck's goals anyway, isn't he?
Yes.
By applying to the Premier League to get his goal back.
Did you hear that I think Pochettino came out and said that Kane is legitimately hurt. His feelings are hurt because of that.
Yeah, by the response. I know you're meant to hate Spurs players. I kind of like Harry Kane because he's always been doubted. You know, it was always questioned. Everyone was like, oh, he's a one-season wonder. Oh, he's a two-season wonder. Oh, he's a three-season wonder. And, like, at some point, you've just got to say he's just an excellent player. And I kind of like him. But this is hilarious. Like, this is so funny. Because you just don't steal a goal off your teammate because you want to go for the golden boot. Like, win a trophy. You've not won a trophy yet. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't win a boot. Win a trophy.
I love it. It's fantastic.
So funny. Oh, I love it. It's amazing. And the fact that it's Spurs makes it so much better.
And people are trying to justify it. Well, of course we want him to be ruthless. Well, then touch the ball next time.
Yeah. And I mean, I've still not actually made my decision on whether he did actually. I can't tell. Like, I don't actually know if he took the ball. And probably Kane's the only person who does know. But anyway. One of the players who started last week and we hope will start this week is Reece Nelson. He didn't really play that well against Southampton. He looked young, I think, would probably be a good way to describe it. Do you think that's something that might be more prevalent for the next few games, for the remainder of the year, or do you think it's something that will begin to develop as he learns the senior game a little bit more?
I think what he did against Southampton was sort of ground himself. I mean, he wasn't impressive, but he wasn't bad. He didn't make mistakes. And I think, I mean, in the preseason, we saw him playing freely. But then whenever he started to play in the senior team, we started in the season itself, in the League Cup and whatnot. He was really intent on making a difference, but it often left him making a lot of mistakes too, costly mistakes. And I think that's what's been my primary concern with him, but it seemed like his priority against Southampton was just don't make mistakes, which obviously you want that to just sort of fade away and him to be whatever he's going to be. But I like that approach. I like the let's iron out the mistakes before I start trying to make a big difference. And it might be a slow growth, but I'd rather see that slow growth than him kind of be a hit and miss guy and just kind of flying by the seat of his pants, whereas he could set this foundation of not making mistakes and then gradually grow from there. I think that's a much more mature approach to it. I don't know if it was him that did it or a coach, but I really enjoyed that was what they opted to do.
Yeah. And he is a very confident guy. Like, you can see he's confident. And I think he expects to be playing in the first team. Like, he expects to be picked every week. Obviously, that isn't going to happen. And I think he kind of knows, realistically, that's not going to happen. But I think he believes he's good enough to be picked every single week. And maybe having a performance like that might be a good thing for him, because it just kind of grounds him a little bit. And he's like, oh, actually, I've still got a long way to go. I've still got a lot of work to put in. There's still a lot of training ground stuff that I need to learn and develop and to fine tune before I'm ready to be playing every single week in the Premier League. And I wonder if maybe without that performance, he wouldn't have realised that. Say he'd played really well for a couple of games, suddenly he gets a bit cocky, a bit complacent, a bit arrogant, thinks he's better than he is. And actually, in terms of his long-term development, I wonder if that kind of performance where he... Like, I think you see kind of the highlights from his youth games and stuff. He just looks quicker than everybody. He's just more athletic than the other players there. And it's head and shoulders. Like, he's just the best player on the pitch by some distance. And on Sunday, he was not more athletic than the players he was playing against. He was arguably as slow as some of the slowest players there, even though he's renowned for his pace. And I think that kind of shocked him a little bit and was actually just a little bit of a like, oh, actually, this is going to be tougher than I thought, and I've still got a lot of learning to do, and I can't just rest on things that I'm better at youth level to assume that I'm going to be better at them at senior level, because this is a higher level against different players. I'm a big fish in a small pond when I'm playing the under-23s and the under-21s. When I'm playing senior level, I'm now at the top level of my sport. And there are players here who are very, very good. Even players playing for Southampton who are down the bottom of the Premier League, they're still good footballers, very, very good footballers. And I hope that provided a little bit of perspective for Nelson that will help his long-term development moving forward in many years to come.
Yeah, no, that's all a good point. I hadn't thought about it like that, but anything to help prolong the career at Arsenal of Rhys Nelson.
I'm sure he'll hit 23. A contract hasn't been signed, and Arsenal will probably sell him for about £27 million when he's worth £270 million.
Or he'll end up like Alex Iwobi and start pissing himself every time he gets near the goal.
yeah, start looking scared as soon as he gets the ball within the penalty area. Do you have anything to say on Newcastle?
No, I mean, they've been in good form. I think they've won their last three, and they actually beat Southampton much more convincingly than we did. But I don't know. I'm excited to see Jonjo Shelvey because I like him, and I really just want to see him match up with Kolasinac. I think that'll be a lot of fun. Or if Wilshere's out there, that could be dangerous because two hotheads in one midfield.
Yeah, Wilshere will certainly have a snap at him. I mean, they are... Newcastle are basically safe now as well.
Yeah.
So they've not... I'm sure Benitez isn't telling his players they're safe. And I'm sure he's saying we need one more win. But actually, Arsenal aren't playing a desperate team like Stoke or Southampton in the last couple of weeks. They're playing a team that probably know they're safe and they probably know they're going to be all right. So... don't be surprised if there's a bit of a lackluster atmosphere in the Emirates, and because not only do Arsenal fans don't really care about the Premier League, but actually Newcastle fans probably... Oh, it's not the Emirates, St. James's Park, sorry. Not only do Arsenal fans not care about it, but Newcastle fans don't care about it that much either.
Score prediction?
How badly do Arsenal defend? I think they'll score goals. I think they will score goals. I'll go for a 3-1 win to Arsenal.
Wow, I was going to go with 2-1, so you're outdoing me this time. No, I mean, I the only thing that really worries me is that we're away from home, which all of a sudden is just not overcomeable for Arsenal, so we'll...
Yes, and actually, that is a good point, because Arsenal, I think they've got 6 games left, and I think 4 of them are away from home, I want to say. At least 3, if not 4. Let me have a look. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, 4 of the 6 are away from home. And that's Huddersfield away on the last day of the season, Leicester away, Manchester United away, and then Newcastle away on Sunday. If they can win 3 of those games and end the year strongly away from home, I think that would be good for the confidence of the team going into next season. Because their away form has been shocking, like really, really bad.
Yeah.
And Wenger's admitted it, and I'm sure the players know it as well. So if they can just have a bit of confidence, like, oh, okay, we can do this, we can win 3 or 4 games on the bounce, on the road, then, especially if they win a couple of them handily, I think that will help, which is a depressing thing to say that that's what they need to do, but I think that's the state of this club at the moment in time. So you're going 2-1.
I'm staying modest.
Is that it?
Yeah,
he does. Does Aubameyang score?
I would like it if he scored a brace, but yeah. One's good.
He always scores.
As long as you just keep scoring. I just want him to pass Alexis.
The Aubameyang Welbeck Alexis race is hotting up. I think we've reached the end of our tether, really.
We have, yes.
We have. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. We will see you. Will we do one next week? I guess we will do one next week. Hopefully Henry will be back, so we don't lose track as so often. But thank you very much for listening. Again, you can find us on Twitter and on Facebook and Google Pain in the Arsenal. You'll find us online. Please get in contact with us if you've got any questions that you want answering on the show. If you have any comments, any feedback and stuff, we always like to hear from you guys. I hope that you were not as nervous as I was last night. And I hope that you're looking forward to Atletico Madrid far more than I am also. We'll see you soon. Goodbye.